You are listening to Roadkill Radio. If you want to join Jane in sending us emails, please do so at roadkillradio@live.ca or try to phone us at 604-525-4167. Best bet is an email, though, because we're going to be on the phone in a few minutes with our friend Doug Christie, lawyer, great defender of free speech and individual liberty, who's here to talk to us today about the important polygamy case that is taking place right now, well, not this moment, but this week here in Vancouver. Hi, Doug, are you with us? Doug Christie, are you there?
Yeah.
Oh, hi. Thanks for joining us. You're coming in loud and clear. It's Terry O'Neill here. I'm joined by Ron Gray.
Hello,
and
Doug.
Hello.
And Carrie Simpson as well is here, too.
Hello, Doug.
Hi there.
So how was your day in court today? Now, we should say that this isn't just going to be a short adventure for you lawyers and, what, 50 of your nearest and dearest friends that are sitting there taking up row upon row of gallery seats. But this court proceeding involving polygamy is scheduled to go right through till January, is it not?
Yeah, it's going to be a long haul, and there's going to be a lot of witnesses, experts, I suppose, people claiming to know what's best for society and how polygamy is allegedly destructive and harmful.
So now this isn't a trial involving any one particular person. This is a hearing that was arose out of a Constitutional Question Act. The Attorney General for British Columbia and the Lieutenant Governor and Council put a reference question to the court asking about the constitutionality of a certain section within our criminal code. Is that how it, am I understanding it?
Yeah, that's right. The section that prohibited polygamy.
All right, and so they want there's a challenge to see whether or not it's going to stand up to our to a constitutional right that individuals cannot participate in this kind of relationship.
That's about right. Yeah.
So the Canadian Association of Free Expression is one. You're representing that group, one of many different groups that want to get a finger into this polygamy pie, as it were. Have their
yeah, that's dangerous, Terry.
have their say, and the cafe's, as I might say, position is in favor of striking down the criminal code section involving polygamy. You is it cafe's position that there should be no law whatsoever involving marriage or marital unions or anything like that?
Well, no, criminal law. I mean, since we legalized same-sex marriage and extended the provisions of the charter to that phenomenon, then it seems a little hypocritical to suddenly decide that polygamy should be criminal, which has a much longer religious history than same-sex marriage, which I guess is probably not a long-standing historical phenomenon.
You're not suggesting, Doug Christie, that all those people that said, hey, wait a minute, we've got to really discuss and debate the issue before we go granting status rights to same-sex marriages, all those people that said the implications and this could lead us down the slippery slope, you're not suggesting that they may have been right?
Well, yeah, obviously I am. I'm saying that once you've abandoned the traditional moral criterion for marriage, then there's really no reason other than sociological speculation about potential harm to prohibit any other form of conjugal union. And I mean, what's the difference between conjugal union and conjugal relations? I guess it depends on whether there's a commitment or not.
And well, yeah, that's something I saw that was kind of confusing about the law, because technically if one is separated from one's wife but then has an affair with someone else, that's almost, under the way the law reads now, you can almost say, well, that's polygamy, or it's sort of a backhanded adultery or something like that. I don't know.
It's the law is very vague in terms of what a conjugal union is, because at one point, I gather, the Attorney General of Canada was saying that conjugal relations are okay, but a conjugal union could offend the law, and therefore conjugal unions where a commitment is made, a long-term commitment, say to look after children, is a criminal act, whereas conjugal relations, which is sort of temporary, I guess, temporary cohabitation suddenly becomes safer than the act of making a commitment to long-term maintenance for children.
Okay, there was another aspect that sort of confounds me, Doug Christie, and that, because I sat in the gallery, as you know, on Monday for the opening statements of the Attorney General for British Columbia, and what confounded me was that if I'm, as a woman, involved in a polyandry-type relationship, right? You know, me and five of my nearest and dearest favorite guys.
Yeah.
That's okay. They're not offended by that, and that's not harmful to me as a woman, and the state doesn't need to be involved to take care of me. But if I decide to enter into a polygamist relationship and be one of five wives, suddenly my brains have taken a vacation, and requires the state to come in and take care of me.
Yeah, I don't know whether I was right, but I perceived as well that multiple same-sex partners was not considered harmful, but polygamous relations with members of the opposite sex was somehow more dangerous.
So I want to just clarify something here. Is the government actually arguing that it's only their only target is a polygamous relationship in which there are multiple wives and a single male? Is that their...
Yeah, the polygyny, which is, as you defined it, is the area of polygamy that they consider to be contrary to the law, I guess.
Well, Doug, I understand there's a difference here between the Attorney General of British Columbia and the Attorney General of Canada.
Yeah, there is, to some extent, and I'm not sure just what it is, but...
Okay, because it's the Attorney General of BC who is limiting his concerns to polygyny. I find myself wondering if we aren't kind of sliding toward Sharia law. You know, in Iran, the government maintains a number of establishments which they call chastity houses, where because they don't want prostitution, so a man can go into one of these houses, and under Sharia law, it's permitted to hire a wife for any period between an hour and 99 years. So you can hire a wife for an hour and
it's true, Carrie.
But that's so they don't have prostitution there, you see.
I got it now.
Got it? Okay.
Well, I'm still trying to wrap around how my brain can go from being really smart and taking care of myself with my five guys, but if I don't want to do the dishes every night and think, hey, there might be some benefits to this, I guess it's in the dishes, is it?
I
should want to do the dishes every night for
everybody. Carrie, it's obviously another manifestation of radical feminism, where if the women have the upper hand or other body part, it's fine.
There wouldn't be enough hands, Terry.
But if the men do, that's not fine.
I have been reading...
Doug Christie here, though. Yeah. Doug, I understand that once we've devalued the whole concept of marriage recognizing a common law marriage as marriage, recognizing same-sex marriage as a true marriage, then what's the difference now? Why shouldn't we recognize polygamy as marriage as well and decriminalize it? But at the core of your beliefs, though, and of this Canadian Association of Free Expression, is there no sort of ideal we really believe that the marriage should be this? That marriage is an important concept, an important part of our civilization, an important part of our society, that we need a stable family, that we need this. Is there any sort of belief system there with your group that is behind this or should be expressed?
Well, I don't know that the discussion is so much about the long-term effects on society. It would seem that by virtue of the existing changes in mores and folkways and marriage customs, that there's not much left of the traditional definition of marriage. But it would seem that you could strongly argue that polygamous marriage, where there is a voluntary association between a man and several women, where there's stability for children and the continuation of a responsibility ratified by law, would be better in some cases than certainly than serial monogamy, where various divorce courts take various parts of a man's, in some cases, a woman's property, or in than single parent families, where you know how difficult it is to raise children. One person has to do that alone. You know, if you were thinking of the social benefits, I would say there's arguments to be made for the alternative of more mothers in a relationship capable of looking after children and looking after each other's children and each other than this current situation with some what you could call conjugal arrangements or perhaps even just family arrangements with single parents.
But Doug, we were earlier this evening, we were talking with Bill Gairdner, and one of the things that he has said for years is that we have removed the contractual basis for marital union. Wouldn't it be better for us to be reestablishing that contractual basis to defend what marriage originally was and is, it's about children. It's not about adults and satisfying their needs. It's about providing a safe place for women and children. Wouldn't we be better off to be moving back toward that than to say, well, we've given this away and we've given that away, and now the whole game is up?
Well, there's nothing to prevent people from teaching religious concepts of what marriage should be and practicing it. Society, the secular society and the secular marriage is now so far removed from anything that is, I would say, consistent with traditional Christian morality, that there's no connection. The state has been completely preempted by secular ideas. There's no scope or room for any religious idea or Christian idea particularly.
But we give... In society gives privileges and protections to marriage precisely because it is the cradle out of which the next generation of citizens comes. It is the perpetuation of civilization. It's the place where the principles and values of the culture are transmitted from generation to generation. When we let this erosion continue, then everybody and anybody gets all of those protections and privileges, which is a real cost to you and to me, but it's also a real cost to the culture and to civilization. It endangers civilization to do that.
I'm not denying that. I don't disagree.
You know,
but we don't have a country that recognizes those ideas at all.
Well, and you know what was interesting? When we were at the opening statements again, I sat there and kind of my mouth dropped open and I had to bite my tongue because I wanted to giggle. The Craig Jones...
How could you bite your tongue with your mouth being open at the same time?
Okay, sorry. I am talented, Terry. Okay. You know that by now.
All right.
But, you know, I listened to there, and again, going back to the same-sex debate, as Craig Jones, the lawyer for the Attorney General, with his four other assisting lawyers, stood up and said, you know, that the reason why we want the law to stand where it is, I should also tell our listeners that the amicus that was assigned to this case believes that the section should be struck, that he believes it's unconstitutional, that it's rooted in puritanical Christian notions that are outdated and discriminatory. But the Attorney General for BC stood up, Craig Jones, and made this argument that no, that may be true that it was rooted in Christian puritanical notions, but in fact, maybe it was right because, you know, there is harm to children, there is harm to family. And he stood up there and he listed that children are harmed by this relationship, that it creates destabilization within society. There was a number of other harmful to women, all these other notions.
It's anti-democratic.
Well, right, because of the power structures. But you know,
it's patriarchal.
Well, and you know what the irony to that, or the hypocrisy, is all those same factors are very much involved in the same sex debate. You know, we know it's harmful to children. We know that it destabilizes society. Mm-hmm. Why isn't the Attorney General of British Columbia taking the feds to task and saying, look, you know, we're going to go all out here. Not only are we saying, you know, keep polygamy within the criminal court or criminal code, but, you know, we got to go back and revisit the whole marriage issue, because all of these things are probably more real factors than the issues as they relate to polygamy.
Well, if you expect consistency from any government official today, you'd have to be kind of oblivious to what's happened in the recent past. This country has no consistency in its principles, as far as I can see.
Well, speaking of on the issue of consistency, the Canadian Association for Free Expression has long been a consistent supporter of free speech. Seems to me more than other related issues regarding freedom. What exactly is the interest of a free speech type organization in the polygamy? Why has CAFE decided to get involved in this case? It's not necessarily a free speech case. Are they coming out from the point of view of freedom of religion, freedom of assembly?
Give me some background. I've asked there. That question, and I believe the answer from my client is that they believe that it's a wedge issue. The real objective here has nothing to do with polygamy or marriage, but to actually break apart a religious community using the welfare of the children as a pretext, and that this wedge, once driven into the, shall we say, rather fringe group, will move further in other directions, in other religious communities. And if you want to talk about the dangers of a patriarchal society, I would suppose that even the Catholic Church could be accused of being patriarchal. And those people who hold the view that patriarchy being inconsistent with democracy is the enemy of, I don't know, the modern progressive society will
egalitarianism.
Pardon?
Egalitarianism.
Yeah, and they'll be moving on to other targets. So although no one else seems to realize, as I probably did, and as others may have, that the same-sex debate was just a step along the road to another debate which will attack anything that is authoritarian, anything that is religious, mm-hmm. particularly mm. Christian,
yeah.
and anything that is patriarchal.
You know, Doug, it is my firm opinion that if you have a fence that keeps out wild animals and protects your family, you really ought not to tear down that fence until you are prepared to put up a bigger and stronger one. But what we're doing is just tearing down every last shred of that fence. That fence is the family.
Once there's a hole in the fence, it's not much good to anything.
Doug, I'm just a little thick on this one here. Sounds like you're in favor of something, but you're arguing something else here, or CAFE is. Walk me through this again, CAFE's reasoning here, why it wants to support the striking down of the criminal code section involving polygamy.
Because I believe the position of CAFE to be that this is a wedge issue.
That CAFE wants it to be a wedge issue?
No, it is the effort to maintain the ban on polygamy is a pretext for an attack upon a religious community.
Mm-hmm. Well,
hang on, just yeah. Okay, and
well, you and I both know that in this province.
So essentially, CAFE is defending religious freedom here. Is that what it's?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, I didn't realize that's okay, what
well,
I wanted to.
Can I pick
to.
Up on that, Terry? Because okay. I actually was this show when Doris was here. See what we learn on Roadkill, Doris Darvishay from Real Women of British Columbia. And I learned that the BC Teachers Federation was involved in this case and wanting to maintain the criminality of polygamy. Which, okay, wait a minute here. They were all out, full board, supporting the same-sex marriage issue. So what is their rationale for wanting to keep the criminal code? And it's because of the defense of religious belief in this. At least that's the best I can come up with, because the two positions just don't mix.
Yeah, but there's another thing floating around here now when we talk about religious freedom. And we can defend religious liberty, but there can only be one religion at the core of a culture, and you cannot defend religious liberty on the premise that all religions are equal and equally irrelevant. That's simply the destruction of everything. That's the destruction of civilization.
Yeah, but that isn't that the conundrum or dilemma that the Constitution of Canada created mm-hmm. when it said you can't discriminate between religions?
Yeah.
Well, it does not actually say that. It
says
you cannot.
We're in a fine pickle.
You cannot discriminate.
It does actually say that in 15.1.
No, it says you cannot discriminate against a person on the basis of their religion.
Well, what's the difference?
Well, that because it does not say that you can't discriminate between religions.
Well,
everyone who chooses to go into this church instead of that mosque is discriminating on between religions. But they're not discriminating against a person on the basis of their religion.
Well, I would find that a difficult distinction to make, but maybe there's something there. I don't see it.
Well, I find it very easy to see. You know, if we choose to go to this temple and not to that synagogue, we are making a distinction between religions. But we are not discriminating against any person on the basis of their religion.
Yeah, but both of those facilities have the right to exist in Canada.
They have the right to exist.
Okay.
But
what would they use to defend their right to exist?
Section 15 of the Charter says you may not discriminate against any person on the basis of their religion.
But isn't that what this case is about, though?
Yeah, isn't that what the sect or group of Mormons in Bountiful really want, is to practice their religion, and the government is saying you can't do it that way because we don't agree with your
right.
religion.
So. There are religions that espouse cannibalism, genital mutilation of women, amputation of hands for theft, and those things are not consistent with the criminal law established according to the culture of Canada. Well, the same thing is true in this case. The culture of Canada establishes certain norms for the institution of marriage because...
But we change that with the same-sex
right.
marriage,
well,
Ron.
But we should roll that back.
Well, that's not happening.
Yeah, that's a good point. So one of the sort of the downstream effects of your position, or maybe what Cafe is saying and what Doug Christie is saying, is that...
Well, you got to be careful there.
Okay.
I'm saying what my clients
okay.
have
so
told
Cafe,
me.
Okay, so Cafe would say... then that those social conservative religious people who are appalled that there's an effort to decriminalize polygamy should really shake their heads and say they should and say instead that they support the effort to decriminalize polygamy, because the counter effort to maintain the ban on polygamy is a de facto attack on religious liberty. Is that what Cafe is saying?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Okay.
And the other side of that coin is, how do you decide that Winston Blackmore isn't practicing a legitimate religion and not decide that the Catholic Church that doesn't allow women in the priesthood is practicing or is practicing a legitimate religion, or they insist on male celibacy, or any of the positions taken by various churches.
Yeah,
well, one goes to the institution of marriage, which is described and protected and supported
and altered
by by our
but
our
Ron,
culture.
That was
the
yesterday. Today the reality is different.
Listen, there are some look Satanism. advocates child sacrifice in order to gain power. Are we going to say that all religions are equal and anyone can do whatever they want to do? No, there are norms
in
Canada.
Yeah, but we're defining this within the context of human relationships, marriage,
this is a good argument, because also regarding religious freedoms, you've got the a-religious person or the atheistic person who's out there saying, why is it that my heartfelt, deeply held, essential beliefs about the state of the universe, about the way life, the meaning of life, where we came from, where we're going, the universe, why are they second-class beliefs? Why is it that somebody who maybe has spent a tenth of the time thinking about religion, about these issues, but wraps himself in a cloak of religion, why are his beliefs suddenly more sacred, or more protected, rather, than my beliefs? Why are his beliefs special?
In
a society that defends certain actions that will allow certain things on the basis of religion, they are, you know, like... The Catholic Church is allowed to discriminate against divorced people in the hiring of teachers for their schools of their religious beliefs.
So far.
Now, why? Now, my atheist libertarian friend would say, you know, like, I have heartfelt, deeply held beliefs too, and they don't get the time of the day when in the public forum compared to somebody who just says, it's sacred, it's religious. I understand these, and I don't have any easy answers to this.
There is an answer for that. Doug Wilson, when he was debating with Dawkins, Dawkins kept telling him, you know, the title of his book was "God Is Not Great: How Religion Poisons Everything." And he said, "Religion
Christopher Hitchens." God is
Richard
not great.
Dawkins.
God is not great. It's Christopher Hitchens.
Oh, it's Hitchens. That's Hitchens. Okay. He said, in his debate with Doug Wilson, he said, religion is bad for society. And Wilson said, on what basis do you call anything good or bad if you believe that everything is just the accidental product of time and chance? Therefore, nothing has any meaning or any value. Hitler is exactly equal to Mother Teresa. Cruelty is exactly equal to kindness. That's the answer to your atheist friend.
Okay. Doug Christie, any response to that?
Well, what's really happened, it appears to me, is this, that Canada, as a result of its constitution, has created for itself a complete moral and insoluble moral dilemma. The conflict between religious freedom for one thing and non-discrimination on the other, that's just one part of it.
Amen.
But the end result is really a complete lack of any clarity of direction, or there is no common moral fiber or binding cohesive elements in Canada.
There used to be. There should be again.
No doubt.
Yeah. There should be again.
Well...
So what we've got to do is roll back the mistakes that we have made and not just, you know, chug on further into the swamp, waist deep in the dig muddy, and the damn fool says, charge on.
Yeah. Well, we've got a little sound effect there. We're getting some feedback here in the studio. Hang on a minute. I'm going to turn that down.
Okay.
Doug Christie, can you tell us, you're one of many, many lawyers who are representing many different groups in this case. Give us a lay of the land, especially for people outside of British Columbia who haven't been following this. Who actually has a poker in this fire? Are you still there, Doug?
Nope.
Attorney General of British Columbia.
Yeah.
He upholds the legislation, he argues that it's valid because it's socially necessary to prevent harm. Then there's the Attorney General of Canada. They uphold the legislation. There's the ASPR Foundation. They uphold the legislation.
What foundation is that?
ASPR Foundation, I think.
And the Canadian Human Rights Museum.
Yeah, I think so.
And they uphold the...
Yep. And then there's Stop Polygamy in Canada. there's some groups that are particularly afraid of Muslim immigration, I think, mm-hmm. which is, I think, at least a discriminatory position to take, but mm-hmm. that's just my argument.
Okay, yeah. Uh-huh.
And then there's the Amicus, Leaf, West Coast Leaf. They uphold the legislation, but they think it should be read down to require some element of, shall we call it, compulsion or coercion, because they say the freely, voluntarily entered polygamous relationship should not be prohibited.
I wonder how they're going to determine that.
Well, they'll have a social worker. they'll have somebody from the government go into Bountiful and interview everybody, and before too long we'll have a huge number of MCFD cases of alleged coercion, and it'll be a
well, it's long, by the way, it's long been my prediction that the case will be upheld on feminist grounds, that the polygamy discriminates. The law will be upheld on feminist grounds because polygamy will be seen to discriminate and oppress women, and that's been my prediction from the outset of all this, by the way.
Well, I sense the same thing, actually.
Yeah, and what is Amicus exactly? We hear that term.
Yeah, that's the friend of the court, basically, because the Attorney General is taking the position of upholding the law, then someone has to be there to stage manage and orchestrate the opponents. And I'm one of the opponents of the law, along with the BC Civil Liberties, and I guess the representative of Winston Blackmore and some of the members of the FLDS.
And isn't there a polyamorous group?
I'm sorry?
Isn't there a polyamorous group involved in this?
Oh, yeah, that's right, too. Can you hear me all right?
Very much so. I'm shouting into my mic, though, so make sure
barely hear you.
Oh, really? Okay.
Oh, yeah, very, very faint.
While you were inside the courtroom, the television cameras were outside, and there was a number of fundamental Latter-day Saints women outside who were making their case to the public that they don't want to see this law struck down. They want the protection of this law. You know, it kind of reminded me of a little while ago when there was an attempt made to bring Sharia law into Ontario through the Arbitration Act, and the most vigorous opponents of that were Muslim women who didn't want Sharia law in Canada. They want the protections of Canadian culture.
Well, that may be. I would suspect that you will always be able to find people who are antagonistic to authoritarian religion in any situation. I mean, nowadays I would suppose that there's many more people disgruntled at churches than they are within them. I mean, even the Anglican Church after, ordination of homosexuals.
Right, yeah.
Doug, you know, a thought crossed my mind earlier today, you know, about the fact that this nation, one of the great references that we always allude to by Pierre Elliott Trudeau was, you know, the government of Canada has no business being in the bedrooms of its citizenry. And, you know, we seem to spend a lot of time in government and courts in the bedrooms of Canadians. You know, it just seems, you know, for a movement to be get out, we're sure got in. You know, do you see this being resolved at this court level, or do you see it going all the way up to the Supreme Court of Canada?
Well, I would suspect it'll go on to the Supreme Court. There's going to be, I would think, more pressure on the polygamous issue. I mean, you know, there's another way to look at this, and it's one argument that I think I will be advancing, that with the emergence of alternative and, shall we say, different sexual orientations, there's going to be a diminishing supply of men capable and willing to father children, and not only father children, not be just a sperm donor, but to take a paternal role. And women who wish to have children by a man who takes a paternal role, not just a sperm donor, will probably be hard-pressed to find candidates, and they may, as a result, find it necessary to enter into polygamous relationships in order to enjoy some semblance of what was a traditional family.
So, in other words, not only did the legalization of gay marriage lead to the deterioration of the concept of marriage, but you're going to argue that it also necessitated polygamy in a way to,
yes,
to give. Well, very interesting stuff. How much time will you get, and when are you likely to stand before the court?
Well, actually, I said I'd take about 20 minutes to half an hour, and I've been sitting listening for, I think, 3 days now. And that's okay. I mean, I've learned a lot. I enjoyed the discussion, and they're very, I couldn't believe anybody could talk about polygamy for 2.5 days, but I learned that was possible.
Okay. Now, who is actually hearing this case?
The Chief Justice of British Columbia.
Right.
Mr. Yeah. Justice Bowman.
So if we can't trust him, we can't trust anyone, right?
Well, with all due respect to the court, I think it's a difficult job to put one person into the decision-making role in such a complicated issue. I really think the legislature, being politically cowardly, and the Attorney General likewise, shifted responsibility for this hot potato into a courtroom where
it
doesn't really belong. It was like same-sex marriage. They didn't want to come to grips and vote on it and have to face the electorate, so they shoved it over to the courts, and the poor judges have to deal with it. And I wouldn't want that position for the world.
You know, we're running
out. That's an excellent point.
We're running out of time here too quick, Doug. But there was another interesting aspect to this, and one of the areas that was at the very beginning of this was CBC wanted to televise this.
Yeah.
And
I was all in favor of that because in all the controversial cases I've been in, I would have much rather the people had an opportunity to hear the actual witnesses than the editorial version spun by the media in secondhand and often ignorant commentary. The public needs to be educated by the law, and live television coverage would give them the opportunity to see and judge for themselves what's really going on.
And I agree with you. It was a perfect opportunity, and denied
CBC
the public.
CBC waited too long. You know, they didn't bring this up until the very morning of the hearing. And I don't blame the judge in any way. This is something that has to be discussed, but I think it would have been best that they brought the application like a week earlier or so.
Yeah.
The problem then is really not enough men for marriages, but not enough real men with cojones in the parliaments of this country.
Well said. And on that note, we're going to have to end the discussion. Good luck in court, Doug Christie.
I don't know if luck's the thing.
I'm not sure either, and I'm not sure if I should have wished you luck or not. That's a very interesting case, and it's gathered our attention here for many shows, and I'm sure we're going to be talking about it more. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
And keep in touch, Doug Christie.
Good night, Doug.
And quite a show here on Roadkill Radio tonight. We've covered a gamut of issues. Run the gamut of issues.
I don't know if you want to get lucky on this one.
Okay. Oh, yeah, okay, fine. I missed that one. Ron, good seeing you again. Carrie, good being here again, and we'll be back next week, right?
Got a big show next week.
Good stuff.
Chris Delaney's going to be joining us, us on the recall efforts, and we're going to also talk to some of the men that have been involved. There was an interesting development in changing the Family Law Act here in B.C., so we've got some interesting
submissions. I got some questions for Chris.
Look forward to all that next week here on Roadkill Radio. Please join us.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
You've been listening to Roadkill Radio.